Produced by PI Media.
Welcome to On the Holocaust from Yad Vashem. I'm your host, Nate Nelson. In this episode of our program, you'll be hearing from Dr. Alexander Avraham, Director of the Hall of Names and the Central Database of Shoah Victims' Names at Yad Vashem, discussing the Yad Vashem Hall of Names. The Hall of Names contains thousands of pages of testimony, each one a memorial to a Jewish person who perished in the Holocaust. Together, they paint a picture of a people who will not be forgotten, but collecting these pages is not easy. Teams of dedicated archivists have been working on it for years. How do they find this information? How are these pages created, and what can ordinary people do to help? Greetings, Dr. Avraham. My first question to you. The Holocaust claimed the lives of millions of ordinary people without much regard for who they were. What kinds of information is left for us about who those people were, and crucially, what information has been lost permanently?
Much of the information was lost because there are not so many records from the time of the Holocaust. Because of this, we have to rely for documentation and commemoration the names of the Holocaust victims on these pages of testimony, which are in fact testimonies by members of the family or friends, acquaintances, who remember those victims and can register their names and some of the biographical details. Until now, we have been able to document something like 4,800,000 names of Holocaust victims. Many of these names come from the pages of testimony, 2,700,000. And other names come from other sources, hundreds of sources. We are trying, for instance, to locate in different archives around the world, mainly in Europe, but not only, names of Holocaust victims. Sometimes we have personal cards from concentration camps, for instance, that some of them were preserved, many of them were destroyed during the Holocaust or the end of the Holocaust. We have partial records from ghettos. In most ghettos, if there were registration lists or something like this, many were destroyed. We have partial deportation lists from different countries, from France, Holland, Belgium, I don't know, Germany, Austria. But we don't know exactly who was deported, but we don't know exactly if they arrived to the end of the tragic or what happened to them after that. So the information is rather scant and partial.
So despite the difficulty, how does Yad Vashem acquire information on individuals that are now long deceased? Describe the process.
One of our areas of working is the pages of testimony. We still receive pages of testimony. We years ago in the 90s, the early 2000s, we have been receiving something like 40, 50,000 new pages of testimony every year. Now the numbers are dwindling, but we still in 2019 we have received 18,000 new pages of testimony. So that means 1,500 every month. So there are still, this is still a source of information about Holocaust victims. We are trying to find other different sources linked to the pages of testimony. We are doing a great effort to reach Russian-speaking Jews in Israel, in the former USSR, in other countries like Germany or the United States, in order to help them or to convince them to fill out pages of testimony. Because one of the gaps in names that we have is Poland, Eastern Poland, and from the former USSR. And because in the former USSR, the awareness about the Holocaust was almost nil, because the authorities didn't speak about the Holocaust, and the suffering of the Jews was silenced, in fact. We have to work with the families and make them understand how important it is to fill out pages of testimony, because otherwise there are no sources for the names of the victims in the former USSR. It's most of the Jews in the former USSR were killed by bullets in the first month of the after the invasion, the Barbarossa operation, and there were no lists whatsoever of the victims. So this is important. Another source of names we have found in the last years is linked to religious or Orthodox Jews in Israel and in other countries, that we have found that many of them did not fill out pages of testimony, but they found or established other or different or parallel ways of commemoration. For instance, at the Central Library, National Library here in Jerusalem, we have almost all the books published in the world on Jewish thematics. And we have found that many books include what we call dedications. That means the author or the publisher is dedicating the book to a number of members of the family who were murdered in the Holocaust. And we have performed random searches and found that something like 60, even 70% of these names are not present in our database of Holocaust victims. So we are now extracting names from these sources. And we have found also, if you visit a synagogue, there are many memorial plaques. People are making a donation of a book, of a stall or something to the synagogue, and they dedicate this in memory of members of the family who were murdered in the Holocaust. And also, many times in Jewish cemeteries, you have matzavot, you have tombstones, on which, next to the name of somebody who passed away after the war, you have inscribed the names of the siblings or parents who perished in the Holocaust, because the families need a tangible place for memory. So, in fact, we have a team of young people who are taking digital pictures of this matzevot, of the memorial plaques, and somebody working at the university, and we are retrieving these names and including them in the database.
You know, speaking of a tangible place, what is the Hall of Names? What does it look like? How is it organized?
Well, the Hall of Names is a separate pavilion at the exit from the Historical Museum at Yad Vashem. The visitors go through the museum and learn about the fate of the Jews during the Holocaust and the events of the Holocaust. And next to the exit, there is this Hall of Names. It's a circular pavilion where we are trying to give the victims back their names and their identities. When you go through the museum, you understand that most of the victims, more than 99% of the victims of the Holocaust, don't have a grave, don't have a tombstone. There's nothing left. So the Hall of Names is this attempt of reconstructing their identities and give them back the names. We know that in many camps, the Nazis assigned numbers to the Jewish prisoners. So we are trying to give them back the names instead of those numbers. When you enter into the Hall of Names, all around you there is a gallery with files. In each file there are something like 400 pages of testimony. So in fact, the whole collection of pages of testimony, more than 2,700,000, is stored and preserved in this Hall of Names, which is something like 8 meters high. And the entrance is at mid-level, let's say. So you can see, we can watch to the ceiling or to the bottom of this thing. It's very high, and all around you there are these pages of testimony. And the ceiling is made out of a collection of something like a puzzle, if you want, or a mosaic of 600 pages of testimony with pictures that are a fraction of the 6 million victims, and give something like a fresco, if you want, of the Jewish life before the Holocaust, because the photographs on the pages of testimony are photographs from before the war. So we want to remember the victims not as victims, but as free people before they become victims. And, you know, people with a future, with plans and something like this. So it's in fact, a picture of the Jewish life before the tragedy.
So I know the answer might appear obvious, but I want to hear your perspective. Why do we do this, or why should we do this?
Because we want to remember, and we want others to know what happened. This comes not in a void, let's say. It's they say the Jews are the people of the book, but we are also the people of memory. It's a long tradition. Sometimes if you look in prayer books that were preserved in the families during during many generations, many times you have family trees going from generation to generation to generation. It's in the Jewish tradition. Many times people were very aware of the need to keep this link and to register the members of the family during this generation. So this is something, a continuation of a tradition, let's say. And it is something that also was very important to the survivors after the Holocaust, and many of them started to register the names of the victims in the DP camps, in the displaced person camps in on German and Austrian territory after the liberation. They were just recently liberated, but one of the things that was important for those survivors was to document and commemorate the names of their mates in the camps that didn't make it, that they were killed in the Holocaust and could not survive. So, and then you have an attempt of by members of surviving members of the communities to reconstruct, let's say, the list of their friends, members of families, acquaintances from that specific community were murdered in the Holocaust. So there are what we call Iskor books, monographs about the history of the different communities from the very beginnings up to the Holocaust. And many of these books, there are something like 1,300 books, Iskor books that were published since the late 40s and 50s. And more than 800 of them have lists of the names of the victims from those communities. And we had a very important project of extracting the names from these lists into our database, because it was important to them and this is important to us to put together all these names in order to remember. And, you know, it's we are trying to document and commemorate not only the names. We are trying to to document also the biographical details, including many times the professions of these people, what they were doing in their life before the Holocaust. And because we think that only like this we can, when you know what who they were and what they did before the Holocaust, you know, only then you can grasp the dimensions of the tragedy. It's because if you don't know what was before, you cannot understand what was lost. You know, if you look in our database, you can find I don't know hundreds of people who were hazanim, for instance, cantors in synagogues. You have many I don't know opera singers, plane pilots, I don't know, physicians, together with you know, tailors and teachers and whatever. But it's a fresco of the Jewish life before the Holocaust, and it's very meaningful for us to you can learn what was then and what was lost.
Now that we have a sense for what you do, can you read us an actual page of testimony?
I have here a page of testimony about a young girl, Claude Eve Markovich, who was born on 9 February 1938 in Nice, in France. She was the daughter of Paul and Manus, and she used to live in Nice. During the Holocaust, she was in hiding in a small place in southern France, in the free territory, Château de Lierre, Cap Pendu. And nevertheless, she was found by the Nazis apparently because she was deported in on June 5, 1944 to Auschwitz. The page's testimony was filled out in 1992 by her brother, Robert Marco, former Markovich. Now, this is a page of testimony. In our database, as I said, we have names from different sources. And one of the challenges for us is to find out if a specific victim is documented in more than one source. And in this case, for instance, the name of Claude Eve Markovich appears on a page of testimony and also on two other documents. One is a list of deportation from France, and on this list we can know exactly that she was sent with the transport number 75 from Drancy near Paris on June 30, 1944 to Auschwitz. And her name appears also on a list of persons who were reported as missing. It's there was a search service for missing persons. So in the last years, we are very active in this intent of linking together when it is possible, and when there is more than one source, linking together the different sources that are related to one victim. And in this manner, we can sometimes reconstitute or put together a larger picture and understand more about the fate of the these victims. We are using computer capabilities, algorithms, and so on, and trying to match different variants of first names, last names, places, and so on, and getting these clusters of different sources about a person. And in this case, attached to this page of testimony, we have also a drawing. This little girl, when she was in Drancy in the camp, was writing to her cousin. And it is very interesting that we have, with pages of testimony, sometimes we have photographs of the victims. And in this case, we have not only a photograph, but also a small drawing that she was dedicating to her cousin. So we are trying in this manner, as I said, to learn who the victims were and to have a better understanding of their existence before the Holocaust.
And for those listening who can't see what you're holding, what does it look like?
Yes, she drew a house and herself, I think. It's a little girl. The house is in fact a school. It is written "école" in school in French. And she, there is a drawing of herself as a young girl and a wreath of flowers or something like this, together with a tree, and she is saying in French that she is thinking of her cousin Jacques, and she is eager to have some news from him. So she was writing from the camp and trying to have news from the family.
So quite literally a picture of Jewish life before the Holocaust, we might say.
Yes, and we have many like this, and our database is on the internet from 2004, and we invite everybody to look and search for relatives in the database, and if the names of the relatives who were murdered are not in the database, we ask to fill out pages of testimony, because sometimes the only memory of victims who are not registered anywhere else live only in the souvenirs, in the memories of their family members.
Thank you, Dr. Avraham, for describing how you and your fellow archivists go about gathering information, organizing, and then presenting it in such a way where we can, hopefully, honor the memories of individuals wrongly taken from our planet. This has been On the Holocaust from Yad Vashem. I'm Nate Nelson. Listeners, thank you all for tuning in.